Welcome to At the Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and this is the weekly radio show about all things food, brought to you from Sonoma County. Not just wine country, but farm country. And as the late, great R.W. Johnny Apple said, a new Normandy north of the Golden Gate. We are blessed with great grass, and we are blessed with dairy folk who make great milk and great cheese. And remember, folks, that those animals grazing help prevent more fires. They eat the grasses before they get all dried out and extremely flammable. The good thing about our grasses is there can be a glass of water in the sky and they start growing again. It can be all dry and there's a little bit of fog. Boom, we have grass. It's really kind of an amazing area. So today we're celebrating, you know, if you listen in, you know that I like just a couple of things. I don't know, peaches and cheese. And today we're going to be talking about the 9th annual SF Cheese Fest. It is on Saturday, September 21st, and it is at the SF Ferry Building in the Grand Hall from 5 to 6 p.m. There's an early VIP entry, and then from 6 to 9, there is, what is it called? Oh, yes, a fest. Today, I have three wonderful guests. One will be on the phone or Skype or some other technology, or maybe two tin cans and a string. But in the studio today, we have two favored folk. Deborah Dickerson is a longtime cheese pro. I think that's the word. That's the most polite. She's actually won a Lifetime Achievement Award from the people who know at the Cheese Society, but also has worked in a lot of different areas. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And then what can I say? When Rick LaFranchi comes, you know there's going to be great cheese involved because he and his family make great, great cheese in the Nicasio family, Valley, the family, yeah, cheese company, because it's good stuff. Welcome both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. So who wants to start talking about the Cheese Fest? I mean, don't raise your hand, wave a cheese.
Okay. I will.
Okay.
So it's an incredible event, open to the public. You need to come because there's the best cheese ever from Marin in Sonoma County, and you get to meet the people who actually make it. I mean, these people are their heroes. You can get their autograph, but better than that, you can taste their cheese. It's absolutely amazing. So, I want to encourage people to please make a date on your calendar, 21st of September, 6 to 9, and if you want to come early and get a private tour.
Yeah, talk about that.
Oh my gosh. A private tour, right? VIP tour. You come a little bit early, come 4:45, and you get a tour that is led by cheese folks who are in the know, right? They have the inside scoop, and they're going to lead you around and introduce you to a group of cheesemakers one by one, and they're going to tell you the inside story on those cheeses and let the cheesemakers talk about their situation, how they make their cheese, why they make that particular kind of cheese, and why it's tied to the land and the recipe. And you get to taste.
And
there's bites in between. Did I mention the bites?
Yes, much eating. It's sfcheesefest.com. We can't forget that. sfcheesefest.com. So how long have you been involved with this particular fest?
Oh, my gosh. Maybe 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, the president and the director, Valerie, have had us at the grindstone now for at least three weeks.
Yeah. You're getting ready and you're getting prepared. And you are in a haven of good food there at the Ferry Building, right? I mean, it's just legendary.
Well, it's a beautiful venue, of course. Upstairs, you can see the Bay Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge. And also, there's some incredible beverages that will be offered at the event. So come thirsty.
All right. So now we get to kind of focus on the reality of cheesemaking. I always say this, and I mean this sincerely. When you talk to a cheesemaker or a farmer, you're stealing sleep. I mean, we know that there are only 24 hours in the day and there's some certain things you got to do, whether it's milk the animals or take care of the wheels or the pieces themselves and turn them and this and that and the other, plus selling it and running a business and dealing with a family. Oh, my gosh. Rick, tell us a little bit about the history of your wonderful company.
Well, we're an old Marin County dairy family. Our roots in the county actually go back in the early 1850s. And where we really started our story was back in 1910 when our paternal grandfather, Fridolino LaFranchi, emigrated from the little village of Maggia, Switzerland. And he came over and went to work for his uncle on, at the time, owned what's now the McAvoy Olive Oil Factory.
Right.
Or plantation, I guess you might say.
Well, we're going to call that a farm.
Okay.
Let's call
perfect.
It.
Perfect, yeah. Okay, that'd
actually,
be better.
You know what? We're all wrong. It's a ranch. That's what I think Marin County calls it, right?
Ranch.
It's the McAvoy Ranch.
Sure.
That's right. Okay.
Sorry. Let's get here. Anyway, worked there for a while and then then went out on his own and throughout Marin County and worked in the dairy industry. And in 1918, he moved on to our current home ranch and with his future brother and sister-in-law. He was working with them in 1919, took over the operation. In 1920, he married my grandmother, Zelma Dolcini LaFranchi, and together they had five children. And the ranch has been passed down from generation to generation. And so we're the third generation and trying to position ourselves to be a successful opportunity for the fourth.
Yeah. You're doing a great job. Well, you have won lots of awards, and you are among our favorite cheeses anywhere. And I don't mean that anywhere in Marin or Sonoma. I mean anywhere. They really are marvelous cheeses. Tell us a little bit about the range of cheeses that you make. We're tasting them, not in the next segment, but in the third segment. Folks, you have to stick around to hear me and our producer, Michelle Marquez, go, mlum, mlum, mlum. But in the meantime, Rick, tell us a little bit about the range of cheeses you make.
Yeah, so we have a range of cheeses. It starts with our Foggy Morning, which is a fromage blanc style cheese.
Yeah.
And then we've added flavor to Foggy Morning as well. We have the Foggy Morning with garlic and basil. And then just our newest cheese, which Clark's going to experience here today, is our Foggy Morning with jalapeno.
All right, I want to mention a couple of things, folks. And we talk about fresh cheese. Have you ever left a stick of butter in the refrigerator slightly unwrapped overnight? Yeah, and you know what happens? The next day, it tastes like everything else in the refrigerator. The fact is that dairy products take on flavor and smell very, very well. Not when it's old Chinese food, but when it's wonderful, fresh fromage blanc made by an award-winning cheesemaker, and they add gently certain things. Those foods, those flavors really get into the food so that it's an extraordinary blend. And not everybody does a good job. Honestly, sometimes it feels like the flavor's here and the cheese is there, but not with you guys. I mean, it really does feel like the cheesemaker, because there's an old tradition of putting caraway seeds and putting cumin into cheese and putting sage. Oy, I don't like that one, but I love sage. I just don't like sage Darby. I mean, it's very green. It's perfect for St. Patrick's. Anyway. So you were saying you've got those two that you're talking about, including the new one.
Those three with the new one with the Foggy with jalapeno. And then we have our kind of brie styles. We have our Formagella, which is kind of a brie style cheese. And what we're actually going to be tasting later today is our Halleck Creek, which is the 8-inch wheel version of the Formagella. We make Loma Alta, which is a bloomy rind table cheese.
Yeah.
Bloomy rind means white rind, and that's just a nice mellow cheese. The cheeses, I think, by definition, are milder to not too strong.
They're gentle. That is really what they are, and they're very well balanced. And if you've just joined us, clearly we're talking about cheese, right? We're talking about the SF Cheese Fest, and it's sfcheesefest.com, fun to say. And it's on September 21st at the Ferry Building in San Francisco. We have talked about it every year on this show that we can, and we always get different professionals and different cheesemakers, because this is the best of the region. I mean, we have some extraordinary cheesemakers here, and spending time with them, the private super VIP is really one-on-one, and it's limited to only 50 people. But there can be hundreds of people moving through this and having light conversations and wonderful tastes. And believe me, you get to talk to these folks. You absolutely get to talk to these folks. So, Rick, your cheeses are in a kind of a gentle, very accessible style that's kind of Swiss, French, Italian?
I think Swiss Italian. Kind of unique to that part of the world.
Yep.
I think their foods, by and large, are flavorful, but certainly not overpowering.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what they're all modeled on. Keep in mind that Switzerland cheese is food.
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of every meal. So it's something that goes along with whatever you're doing. And so, you know. And
so wait a second. So you're saying the cheese is the tacos of Switzerland, right, basically.
I would say that, yeah. Yeah, and that part of the country also, it's more of a Mediterranean climate there,
right.
So it's not as hot or cold, I should say, as it is over the mountains in the German or French parts. So I think their cheeses are somewhat stronger.
Well, that's exactly my experience as well. I remember my first overnight trains through the Swiss Alps and the Italian and all that back and forth. What was it called? West Germany. I went to Berlin so many years ago, and you go through all of that and you think to yourself, all these cultures meeting together, you know what I mean? The Italian culture and the Swiss culture and the French culture and German and all that stuff. And one of the languages that's so universal is cheese, isn't it?
Sure is.
And the rest?
We were at Halleck Creek Formagella. And then we go into our Tamino, which is a lightly washed, soft ripening cheese, which is one of my real
favorites. Lightly and washed meaning?
It's washed like a couple times during its 2-week aging process.
With?
And with the B-linen.
Okay.
And then as it ages, it's got about a 90-day life. It starts off as a mild bloomy rind, white rinded cheese. Right. As it ages, it turns oranger and oranger and funkier to the point where it gets to the end of its life.
It's
pretty powerful. You know?
Sounds like some of my favorite people.
Yeah.
No, but and that's really important to know that a lot of times a cheese, I mean, will start as very gentle and great for kids or somebody who doesn't really know that much about cheese. And if it's aged properly and over a period of time, it becomes its own public demonstration, right?
Absolutely.
With its little fist in the air going, eat me, I dare you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then there's our Nakasha Reserve, which is the classic Alpine style cheese, unique to that part of the world, the one they go up in the high Alps in the summertime, make the cheese, bring it home to sustain them through the cold winter months.
Don't forget, bring it home by rolling it down the mountainside, right? A lot of times that's
where that's happened.
That has definitely happened. And, you know, but folks, these are many cheeses, particularly the round wheels that are aged, that were used to pay taxes to the local king or whoever was in charge in those days. You paid your taxes with your cheeses because other than your daughter, sometimes was the case. I know, terrible. But it was what you had that was of greatest value. And both of those things were actually done. Folks, read a book. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk on the phone. I think we're going to be talking with Brandon Wood of the Cheese Parlor in Livermore, California. And we'll be right back here. And then we're going to taste right back here at the table. We are back at the table. I'm Clark Wolf, and we are talking with now Brandon Wood from the Cheese Parlor in Livermore. Hey, Brandon.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going cheesy. What can I say? We're talking about SF Cheese Fest. Tell us about the Cheese Parlor and beautiful downtown Livermore.
Sure. Well, actually, I guess I should respond as it's going Gouda.
Oh, dear. All right. We've just gone off the air in 9 counties. No, I'm teasing. You're funny.
The Cheese Parlor is a tiny little shop in beautiful downtown Livermore that has 60 to 80 cheeses by the pound cut to order.
Wow.
We have charcuterie options and then all the other fun frills that go on a cheese board. And then we have local beer and cider on tap. And we have Livermore Valley wines exclusively because I am in wine country here in Livermore.
Yes, wine country to wine country. Here we are calling from Sonoma County. And that's really wonderful. How long have you been doing that wonderful spot?
We've been open for 2.5 years, which is crazy to say out loud.
Right? It goes so quickly and so slowly, doesn't it?
That is a great way to say it, Clark, yes.
Well, it's really true. I mean, my first job really in food retail was in my 20s in San Francisco, and I opened a cheese and wine shop at the base of Nob Hill. It was 500 square feet. I had 32 cheeses and $200, and the people who owned it went Chapter 11 the second week of my employment. So I learned what a business does and doesn't need. I got an MBA the hard way, and I had walls of empty boxes of crackers, and I made funny things in the window so that people would laugh at them and maybe come in, and it got into the newspaper, and I learned about learning. I learned about the process of learning about food, much of it from people on the phone who I was ordering from, much of it from the guy who would come with a refrigerated truck to sell me more than I could afford so that I had to sell it that week, and the customers. What is it like to serve your local public in Livermore?
It's been a treat, to be honest. Like, everything about it is fabulous. The people have supported this shop and wrapped their arms around this shop in a way that I would have never expected. And I have nothing but gratitude and thankfulness towards this community because of the way that they've lifted up this shop. I feel like a cheesy lead singer saying this of a band, but I would not be here if it was not for them. So I am more than filled with joy to serve my community fabulous cheeses.
Yeah, it is so interesting. When I was, I got an undergraduate degree at San Francisco State University in English literature. You know, that's useful. Actually, I could read. And then I was a waiter on the railroad on the Silver Zephyr between Oakland and Chicago. Came off.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, we'll talk about it at the fest. And came back and was looking for a job, and there was a sign in the window. I mean, there was a sign in the window. And I thought to myself, I had been wanting to do something that was like of the community. And forgive me, I'm first generation American, vaguely European. Come on, it was the 70s. I was in San Francisco. And what I couldn't get over is what impact that little shop had on the local community. People coming in to buy a baguette, to share some gossip, to teach me about a cheese that they had when they were growing up. All those things, I understand why they lift you up, because you really do lift up the community, don't you?
Absolutely, 100%. And we have everybody from the mayor all the way down to high school kids coming in to not only to like learn about cheese, but to just eat fabulous artisanal products. It's very special.
So you've been coming to some events to help let people know about your community and your shop. What is the SF Cheese Fest to you?
The SF Cheese Fest to me is just the exact representation of why I opened this shop. It's to build community through cheese, and especially like hyper-focused on California cheeses. So to just show the community that already exists here in California what they have at their fingertips and how excellent it is, and to not only show them the product, but to introduce them to the community that's making this fabulous artisanal product for them. I think the people behind the product sometimes really encompass what their cheeses are. And if you meet the person and hear their story, the cheeses just become not only flavorful and special, but there is an extra element of joy in that, because you are getting to not only taste the product, but get to meet the humans behind it.
Yeah, if you've just joined us, I'm talking to Brandon Wood from the Cheese Parlor in Livermore, California, and we're talking about the SF Cheese Fest. That's sfcheesefest.com, Saturday, September 21st, and it's at the Ferry Building in San Francisco. So it's kind of in the middle of, oh, I don't know, the Bay Area, right? I mean, people used to say Sonoma County is that like north of San Francisco? And I always say no, it's in the center, surrounded by Mendocino, Napa, Marin County, and the Pacific Ocean. So, you know, every community is the center of our lives, right? Every community is that. And the idea that Livermore and people, you know, when Livermore and Lodi and other places started being called, or Paso Robles, wine country, people were like, what? And then they realized, you know what? You can grow great food of all kinds almost everywhere in California. Mind you, right now you can make a very good grilled cheese sandwich just on the sidewalk. That's another aspect of our life. I mean, has what? So the cheeses you have, you talked about 80 or 90 cheeses. What part of that is from California and from America?
I focus on keeping about 70% of the shop domestic. So 70% of the cheeses are from the U.S., 30% of the cheeses are international, only because I feel like to be a proper cheese counter and support my community and serve my community in that way, I need to have some traditional classic cheeses like Roquefort and Comté, just to say a few. And then I would say about 70% or 20% of my 70% are California-made cheeses.
That's extraordinary. I mean, there was a place in New York City called Lucy's Way, and you can imagine how way was spelled. And she had only American artisan cheeses and Reggiano Parmigiano, because she could not physically own a cheese shop that didn't have Parmesan. It just was it was not in her capacity, you know what I mean, in her bloodline. But I think that's wonderful. If 20% of the 70% of your American-made cheeses, I try not to call it domestic only because it sounds like it's been neutered. You know what I mean? It's like you can't leave the backyard, you're domesticated. But American cheeses, I wrote a book called American Cheeses, not to be confused with the religious figure. And it was amazing because that came out in 2008. And, you know, a number of those people are still very much with us, because up until that point, people have really been building and building, and people like Rick, who's here today, you know, these are multi-generational situations. The challenge, of course, is when we turn over and there isn't a generation in our family. when there isn't that kind of thing. And so, you know, here in Sonoma County, we and Marin, Cowgirl has now gone to a larger family, and Laura Chanel has gone to. But you know what we're finding here is other young people are coming to our grasses and our milk, and beginning some new cheese companies and some kind of new traditions. And we're hoping that some of those families build. What are you looking forward to seeing when you're here in San Francisco briefly?
I'm looking forward to be honest, I've engrossed myself into this community, and I'm looking forward to seeing friends and seeing people that I love and I appreciate, and I'm excited to talk to them, and I'm excited to share their experiences and their cheeses with the lovely people who are going to attend SF Cheese Fest. And to kind of wrap it all around, I know Rick's with us, and Rick's farm and cheeses are actually what got me into cheese and got me started, because I visited Rick's farm for the first time visiting a farm, and I got back to my Whole Foods market counter, which is where I worked before I opened my shop, and Rick changed my whole perspective on cheese and how to sell cheese and who I was selling cheese for. So,
and where it came from. Yeah. And where it came from. All right. Well, look, I will tell Rick that, who does not have headphones on because he's carefully divvying up cheese so that we can devour it in the next segment. But I look forward to seeing you. We all look forward to seeing Brendan Wood from the Cheese Parlor in Livermore at the SF Cheese Fest. Thanks so much. We'll be right back at the table. Are back at the table, and this is the fun part. I'm Clark Wolf, and I'm about to eat cheese. I mean, come on. You know, what could be bad about an afternoon like that, right? Rick LaFranchi from Nicasio and Deborah Dickerson and I. All right, and Michelle Marquis, because she is our producer and our news director. We are going to taste some cheeses, and Rick, we're going to let you do the guide. Where are we going to start with?
Okay. Well, I think what we'll start with is actually what we're going to use is the best bite that Brandon's going to be featuring at the festival next week.
Talk about a preview.
And that's our foggy morning spread on a baguette, drizzled with a little olive oil and some cracked pepper.
Ooh.
And so I'm going to
walk. Excuse me while I walk over here and grab a. Right. Are they all, they're all the same?
No, the ones with the pepper on it.
Oh, the ones with the pepper on it.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
So.
Deborah,
that one's for you. I love this. You should see this. This is a group of grown people sliding but you know what? It's compostable. Those plates are made out of leaves from the. I would eat, but Michelle's eating, so only one of us is allowed to eat at a time. Michelle, what do you think? Come on. I mean.
Okay, we got mouthful, but I love that combo. Mm. The spicy, yummy pepper. The olive is actually really nice. The oil. Together with the cheese. It's great.
It's just that other little thing that you want to have that makes you feel like a complete meal. Mm, it's really wonderful. Okay. And what's next?
Next up is our Halleck Creek, and it's a kind of a mild Bloomy Rind Brie style cheese, and this cheese just took third place in the American Cheese Society Open Division Cow's Milk Competition
with how many
last
cheeses?
Month in Buffalo.
Yeah, and how many cheeses are entered? Something like 2,000.
I think it was probably closer to 1,600 this year, but plenty.
You know, plenty.
There's no lack of competition, and all excellent cheesemakers in their own right. And this cheese is just it's the big sister of our Formagella, which is a 3-inch round. This is an 8-inch wheel, but it has different nuances from the Formagella just because of the size and the amount of times it's flipped over the course of its aging process.
And the white Bloomy Rind comes from where?
That's from the. What is it? The Penicillium candidum that's in the room where they age.
It's in the room. You don't inoculate.
We initially, when we first started, we did inoculate or just spray the room.
Yeah.
And then after that, it takes on a life of its own.
Folks, this is one of my favorite stories in the whole world. When Limburger got moved from one town in the Midwest to another, it didn't work. They were trying to make it and it didn't work. So they went back to the original room, scraped the walls, smeared that on the new walls, and it worked. Because man does not live by cheese alone. I mean, you know, cheese does what it wants to do in the entire universe, right? It's part of nature, right? And it interacts in that way. So you don't inoculate at all because it's all right there, right? All right, now I see that you're passing it. Deborah, he wants you to eat that cheese. And it, you know, I say, but the man gives you cheese.
Can I just say this? The wine on this is just a whisper. It is the thinnest, most delicate whisper. It's beautiful.
It is, and people should understand that the white bloomy rind, generally speaking, is not only edible; it's delightful. It's really. I think I have one. Yes, is it the same?
Yep.
Yes, I think it's delightful. What if you have a white bloomy rind cheese, and you open it up and you smell a little bit of ammonia? What I was taught is leave it open in a cool part of the kitchen for a few minutes. Sometimes it's just on the wrapper. Just let it air out. And then the other thing is that if it has gotten into the rind a little bit, because you've had it longer than I would ever have it in my house because I ate it too fast, you can cut off the outside of the rind and just eat the molten, creamy, wonderful interior, mm-hmm. right?
Yes. No, absolutely. Yeah. Cheese is so much that so many factors influence the outcome of the cheese and little things that you can do and then perceptions you may have. It's just like eating rind. If it looks too gnarly for you, don't eat it because right. it may detract from the flavor of the cheese, but there's no shame in eating it or in not eating it. It's totally up to you.
Right. And the French have something called frais de sel, which is basically brie just in the curd that's just been dipped into the salt brine. That's it. It doesn't ripen. There's no white mold on the outside. And they eat it usually for breakfast. And that's just fine. You should eat a cheese the way you like it. I like this any way you want to sell it. What is this? This is glorious.
Next up is our Nacacho Reserve. This is the Alpine style cheese that they make over there. And this is the one they go up in the High Alps and spend the summer up there making cheese and bring it down to and sustain them through the cold winter months. And I'm sure there were times probably when the cheese was the only thing available to eat.
You know? Well, not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, if I had to live on this, I would be very happy. Maybe some, you know, dried turnips from the basement or something. So from the cell. But it's such a surprise because it really does melt in your mouth. It's a firm cheese, but it's a semi-firm cheese, I guess you'd say. But it just does melt in your mouth, and it has a wonderful, in wine country, we call it a finish. It's at the end of the day, you have a really good tasting mouth, I think is the technical term. Deborah, what would you say?
It's bright, and it fills your mouth, and it makes me want to have another bite.
I would love to have it on its own. I would love to have it with a pear. Mm. I wouldn't mind this with a Gravenstein apple.
Ooh.
Apparently, there are some grapes that are for the table. Did you hear about this? And that would be wonderful as well. All right. Rick, what do we have now?
Next up, you have what we call San Geronimo, which is actually a raclette-style cheese. It's the great melting cheese that you can heat up and scrape off the melted part onto boiled potatoes, toast, and pickles. It's a great use for that cheese, and it's been a real successful cheese for us over the years, garnered many national awards, and the cheese is just real enjoyable. Again, it's got a powerful flavor, but not an overwhelming flavor.
It's really a wonderful version of this. A lot of times when we get raclette in this country from Switzerland, it's very firm. And there are raclette machines. I remember the 70s, right? And it warms the edge of the cheese, and there's this big wheel, and it's a big ritual. This you can do at home, and it beats the heck. Well, I guess it could be followed by s'mores. You know, there's melting is it could be a thematic kind of a multi-course, right? It's a series of courses all designed to have melty food. But it's also one of those cheeses that's very associated with a dish, with raclette, the meal, but is very, very lovely just on its own, absolutely on its own.
Well, thank you, Clark. We appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, there's more.
There's one more.
Oh, there's one more. Okay. In all the excitement, there's one more cheese. And by the way, folks, these are lovely bites of cheese. And you can have cheeses like these. They're cousins from other parts of Marin and Sonoma County. Ooh, what do we have here? I see something at the end of a small wooden spoon.
Oh, is this the jalapeno?
This is the Foggy Morning blended with jalapeno.
See, what
this
I
is
like,
our newest cheese.
Yeah, what I like is that you've done this in a progression of flavor intensity so that we're not blowing it out with the jalapeno at the beginning and unable to taste the rest. You've really done that wonderfully. And wow. You know, what I love about this is you get the taste, the flavor of the pepper, not just the warmth, not just the heat. The heat is there eventually, but I mean, when I brought a Californian to New York City to work in a restaurant called Arizona 206, he said, all peppers are not the same. They have different seasons. They have different flavors. And if you ever want to really understand the flavor of a jalapeno, eat this cheese. All right, we'll be back in a moment, right back here at the table. Back at the table, and if I sound a little mellow, it's because I'm consuming some of the most wonderful cheese I've had in a while. Absolutely delicious cheeses. Rick, tell us about the fact that these are farmstead cheeses. Explain what that means.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, well, like I said earlier, we have the old family dairy that we've been in business there for 105 years, and about, it's almost 15 years ago now, 14 and a half years ago, we added a cheese element to our operation. And so we use some of our milk to make our cheeses. And we are excited that we're able to do that because we feel like it guarantees the quality of the milk. We understand where it came from. We use only the freshest morning milk to make the cheese. And so consequently, when it gets into the vat, it's only a few hours old. And according to our mentor, Maurizio Lorenzetti in Switzerland, he said he really feels that that helps the quality of the cheese quite substantially.
Well, I mean, anybody who's ever eaten food, who knows anything about food, knows that fresh does do a thing, right? Is that you go to the farmer's market and you get produce and it's so fresh, even at home on the windowsill in the fridge for 2 weeks, where it's younger by 4 weeks than anything you can buy in the grocery store, because that's all been shipped around and here and there. And a lot of times, and that's one of the things about this region that's so precious, folks, and that is that the milk is here to go into the cheese that's being made here. And so the cheese then can travel a bit if it wants to, or if you want it to, or if somebody calls up and says, send me a couple of wheels, roll them on down, pay your taxes. But when the milk wants to be made into cheese, it needs to be close by, right?
That certainly helps a lot.
So, Deborah, you taste and work with cheeses from all over the world. I mean, you've been working with, you know, with a company in England, and you've been working with Jasper Hill. What do you see in the range of cheese making going on today? Because, you know, in the 80s and 90s and aughts, it was kind of exploding, you know, from the 70s beginning in Santa Rosa with Laura Chanel, let's be honest here, and Jennifer Bice and Redwood Hill and all that stuff. And you know, Igvella doing these things. But, I mean, there was an explosion for some time. But now, what's going on?
Well, I see, I'm so fortunate. I see amazing cheeses on the marketplace. And I think the thing that I'm most aware of is the reduction of the size of the wheels.
Yeah.
Right? I see smaller wheels. So that inevitably means more attention to the rind, right? Which is a huge part of cheese making, is the perfection of your rind as it is affects the cheese. And I see more washed rind. My goodness, when I first started making cheese, a washed rind cheese that was a bit odoriferous was just like appalling. And now
it was called stinky cheese.
It was called stinky
cheese. And we didn't
cheese.
Like that.
Oh, we didn't like it at all. And now it's like we've stepped up, right? We've become a bit more desensitized and appreciative.
That's it. It's I believe sophisticated is the word I would look for.
Oh, thank you very much. That's
and
much
part
better.
Of the problem is that the cheeses that we got in this country that were washed dry, that were stinky, were industrial. And they, you know, if you take that kind of complexity and do it industrially, it's off, it's hard, it's metallic, it hurts. I mean, it really does hurt. But if you go to France and have a Robuchon, if you have one of these Switzerland mountain cheeses that's been washed with beer or who knows what else, I mean, they're extraordinary. Yeah. And also they're stinky. All right, so you see smaller formats.
Smaller formats, more washed rinds.
Right.
We have an incredible amount of Alpine cheeses in the cases.
Yeah.
Huge amounts. And some beautiful ones made here in America. And a lot of flavored cheeses still, which kind of surprised me. But the cheeses are really creative in their flavors.
Yeah.
Cardamom and anise and flavors like that. Not just dills, not just the American flavors. So we've come a long way in America.
So, Rick, you have this cheesemaking family. Do people come? I mean, is it just being run by the family, or do people come and work for you and work with you? And you know what I mean? Because there's a tradition we found when we went to Italy that the cheesemakers were very generous. You know, like, come on in, I'll teach you how my great grandfather made it. Mm-hmm. And that's true of cheesemakers here too. But sometimes people want to come to California to learn how to farm, to learn, you know what I mean, to learn how to make wine. Does that happen in cheese as well?
We haven't gotten into that too much so far. I mean, we certainly have a staff that, you know, operates the creamery and does all the hard work and very much appreciate what they do. Haven't really opened it up to outside influences yet because we're so carefully monitored and tested and inspected consistently, not just, you know, every other month, or it's every month and sometimes two or three times a month. It just depends. So you have to be really, really careful to ensure the quality of the product and that there's nothing contaminating. So it kind of, unfortunately, kind of prevents allowing anybody to really to come in from outside and help you out, so to speak, just on a volunteer basis.
You know, it's really quite interesting that you're bringing that up. It's very important to remember that we have very high standards that here in California, particularly Northern California, but here in California, we exceed every federal standard, right? Every federal requirement for clean water in our dairies and for the inspection in the dairies themselves. And I don't ever want to give it a bad look. But I mean, while we read stories about contaminations other places, it just doesn't happen here when you know, when it's your family making cheese for my family, somehow things are more incredibly carefully done, aren't they?
Sure, absolutely. It's very important to you that you provide a product that people can really appreciate and enjoy, and that, most important of all, is safe.
That's absolutely.
If I can just bring us back to the Cheese Fest for one moment, I think one of the things that you have the opportunity to see is the creativity that these cheesemakers bring to their product. And when you come to the Cheese Fest, you're going to be able to see these recipes and these cheeses on the table. So please come.
All right. When we come back, we're going to repeat all the important information about SF Cheese Fest. FET. All right, FET is good too. SFCheeseFest.com. We'll be right back here one more time at the table. Table. I'm Clark Wolf, here with Deborah Dickerson and Rick LaFranchi from Nicasio Valley Cheese Company, and we're talking about the SF Cheese Fest, and that's 9th Annual SF Cheese Fest, sfcheesefest.com. Could I say that enough times? SF Cheese Fest. Come on, you got to be there. September 21st at the Ferry Building in San Francisco. Absolutely magical place. And Deborah, remind us why we're all gathering other than tasting great cheeses, which is reason enough for me. Why are we going to the Cheese Fest?
Well, besides tasting great cheese, meeting people and having good beverage, you're associating with people who are like-minded. But especially this is an opportunity for a fundraiser for the California Artisan Cheese Guild. And it's an opportunity to see in real time what their values are and what their mission is, which is to educate and to share the mission of the cheesemakers and to spread the awareness of what amazing artisan production is going on here in California.
It's important to remember that big industrial cheese companies have millions of dollars to spend, advertise and billboards. What was it? Billy Bongs? I don't know what that means. But we don't. What we do, right, if you love cheese in California, in America, you put some in somebody's mouth, and you get the sparkle in their eye, and you get the tingle on the tongue. And Rick, what are you looking forward to at the Cheese Fest?
I just look forward to the opportunity to see who's new in the business, because for us, I know back 9 years ago when this started, we were a relatively new cheese company that most of the people there had never heard of us before or never experienced our cheeses. So it's an opportunity to see the diversity and all the variety of cheeses that are being made in California. And so it's a great opportunity to experience that.
Yeah, and I have to say, and again, your cheeses were always good from day one, but they're better. They're better.
Thank you, Clark.
And you know what? A winemaker gets, I don't know, 18, 20 vintages. You guys get one every day. Sometimes twice a day, depending on the kind of milking and the kind of cheeses that you're making. And it really makes me happy. I once visited a cheese making, well, it was actually a farm, a purpose-driven farm. So it was spiritual. And they had cows for the manure. And they thought, well, we have cows and manure, we need to make cheese out of the milk. So they made the cheese exactly the same way every day. And every day the cheese was different because they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't realize that cheese is a living food. And in order to get the same cheese every day, you have to do different things. There's moisture in the air. The cow's in a bad mood. I mean, you know, whatever it is, the walls need to be scraped. I don't know what it is. But what you've done, it's wonderful to be part of this family, right, Deborah? So
absolutely.
That over periods of time, we can see the real depth and growth of the flavor, the nuance, the subtlety. And we hope years and years and generations of success. Thank you so much for both of you, all that you do, and for all that you will do to make sure that we have great dairy products, great foods, great cheeses, great family, great traditions, and you know, underneath it all, great dirt. Thanks for it's sfcheesefest.com, right? Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Clark.
Thank you, Rick.
We'll see you next time at the table. All right.